If you are anything like us, you've been waiting about a decade for the climax of Game of Thrones. And with season 8 finally behind us, well, we got it. We sure got it. Today on Nonproductive, we have a podcasting first. We're doing a loved it, hated it show. That's right, one half of the show will only be about the things we loved about it. And the other half will only be about the things we hated. Ready, folks?
Yeah!
So let me establish the rules before we go. The way it works is pretty simple. In one half of the show, you're only allowed to bring up things that you love. No matter what, you're not allowed to bring up any criticism. If somebody brings up something you hated, you just have to, okay, sure. And, you know, you can acknowledge it, but that's it. That's all you can do. You can ask questions about something. So if somebody says, I really love the fact that the horses seemed especially rested in this season. Weird. And you can be like, that's odd. Why do you love that? But you can't actually, contradict them at all. Same thing with the hate. When it's the hate section of the show, you can only bring up things you hated. And if somebody says they hate something that you love, you can grin and bear it and move on. You could ask questions that you can't contradict. To be fair, we're using a coin, the love-hate coin, to determine which goes first. All right?
So what's heads and what's tails?
Well, it's the coin is magical in that it says love and hate on it. Oh, no.
You had to believe it was going to be one or the other.
I don't know why.
I don't know why you're taking it by surprise. This takes you by surprise.
I feel like I'm worried.
Well, you're in charge. You can change it and just lie to us.
All right. So we're going to start with what we hated about this, I guess, series finale, and also the last season, and possibly the show as a whole. Who would like to go first? James.
I guess I'll go first because I don't know if my hate was as strong as some of the other people's here. But at the same time, I guess so much of it feels unearned. It's almost as if like I had stopped watching the show, let's call it, you know, a few seasons back, and you kind of were describing it to me over coffee really quickly. And I'd been like, okay, yeah. Those big bullet points make sense.
Yeah.
And then someone would tell me how they got there, and I'd be like, what?
Yo, you know? Totally.
Like as if the natural progression of the show made sense, but because of the fast plot time and just all of the construction of the story this season, it just didn't feel earned. I think, and Al's unfortunately not here, but he managed to quote somebody who said, you know, foreshadowing is not character development.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw that all over the internet. People are saying it, and it sounds like a little... So here's the thing. There are toxic fans, and I guess maybe toxic fanboys. We never really discussed that. People who, you know, defend something no matter what. So, like, it's always... I'm always hesitant to go down this sucked road. But unearned does feel very close. It's not that the A and the B's don't make sense, how characters ended up where they did. Some cases it didn't make sense. It just like the journey was baffling. I agree with that. Michelle?
No, I also agree with it. It felt kind of sloppy. They were trying to really tie up every loose end that they thought was important. And I feel like may have forgotten some others that were very imperative to the whole plot of the series. And then also, I don't know where this falls under, but there was the stupid Starbucks cup in the one scene that aired, and then they still didn't learn their lesson, and there was a water bottle under Sam's chair in the finale, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, yeah, they edit it where it's not going to show again in any, if you go back and watch it on DVR or something.
It suggests something. It feels like it suggests something.
But it's just like, how much did this show cost to make that there's a Starbucks cup?
Jordy?
Here's the big problem for me. Mm-hmm, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think that the books were perfect. In fact, many times I stopped reading books because I'm like, I don't really like the way that this character's going. And I think a lot of criticisms people have is, well, it's unearned, you know, but it would be better if it was done in the books. But I'm going to hard disagree there, because when your entire character arc for a character is this person is going to literally shut their children away in a prison because she can't control them. She's trying with every fiber of her being to deny what she is. To say that it's good character development for her to just lose the war because she does bad things sometimes, when every other character feeds their enemies to their fathers or kills their enemies in cold blood. Like, only one character suffered the real consequences of their cruelty. And that is a problem narratively. And if George R. R. Martin does it, I'll have a problem there too. It's not just unearned. I feel it's absolutely bad writing and poor choice in character narrative.
So my question to you is, you're telling me there's no scenario that you would accept Daenerys as making that heel turn? That's what it almost sounds like.
If George R. R. Martin somehow convinces me, I will give him so many writing awards, but I cannot believe
coveted
Tony Award. Just all of them. It's like literally like a handcrafted paper mache thing on my desk. Mm-hmm. But if you were to tell me that the only character who seems consciously avoidant of making people suffer under her rule is somehow not as good as a character who I love, but that is a literal assassin and murders people and steals their faces and isn't as good as a character who feeds their abuser to their dogs when they could have just killed him. All of these people did what they did because they believed it was the righteous vengeance in their heart. And so did Daenerys.
Pete?
And everyone else was rewarded for it, and she was punished Pete. For it.
But doesn't it bother you that the people that, you know, Arya and Sansa and everyone else you described killed did things to deserve what they got, and the people of King's Landing were just innocent people that going about their day that just happened to be in the same city as Cersei?
So what my spin off that, because we're not allowed to crap on other people's hate, but this is my own hate, is that I kind of agree in that I don't think Daenerys was set up to take the kind of fall she took. And I also totally agree with Jordy. She takes it. She takes more responsibility than any other character. Like, the argument, the hot takes that you hear all over the place is that, well, look at Daenerys and how often she kills slavers and rapists and monsters and abusers. That's just signs she's a bad person and bad things should happen to her. But then your hands go up and go, well, what about Arya, who baked people into a pie? What about Sansa, who maybe planned this whole thing so that Daenerys would go bad in front of people and they would have to kill her? I don't know, it's very arguable. That's another thing I hate. Mm. So I kind of get it. I'm on board with that, although I wouldn't quite go as far as saying there isn't much that would make me believe it. I think there is. I think it's more insulting because I could have bought into this. I could have bought into this crap, except, hey, give me maybe another episode. I even wrote, shameless plug, I even wrote a little twist on one episode, where the one where Daenerys goes Mad Queen, that makes me feel a little bit like, all right, I guess this is a half step. She slipped. Michelle?
If they had done more in episode 5 of what they showed about her in episode 6, maybe it could have been done slightly better.
Yeah.
Because she always started with, this is the last war. This is the war to end wars. Where that's like, nah, JK. Right. When she's standing in front of this Unsullied and the Dothraki. Oh, well, like, we gotta go everywhere else. Because I gotta be, like, the best.
And war to end all wars. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think it's more painful that they could have gotten away with it. Jordy?
Yeah, I actually do agree with that. That had they showed that she was suddenly becoming more of a warmonger, like, that's the one direction where I'd go, you know, maybe Daenerys, chill out. Maybe take a step away, hun. But we didn't see any of that until episode 6. And so, you know, it's just, it's really difficult to see what they were trying to do.
And it was so close. All we would have had to have done is, first, we had to accept the big thing that killing unarmed soldiers and accidentally killing a bunch of, you know, the collateral damage of killing a few civilians while you're doing that is bad enough for our characters to think this is a bad thing and maybe turn against her. You could have the drama of episode 6 maybe a little bit more dirty. Maybe the drama is, does Jon want to, and I really, we'll even get to this in the next minute. Does John want to kill the, quote, love of his life? Because she's probably going to be a tyrant, and she's taken a lot of risks, and she's killed a bunch of people accidentally as collateral damage. Is that, like, that makes me feel like both parties are questionable. I'm kind of cool with that. But instead, we got the noble guy who's willing to kill his crazy ex-girlfriend because she's crazy and women can't handle power.
Wait a minute. When did Ygritte do any of that?
Oh, Ygritte. Ooh.
Oh, she was the best.
Yeah, we all love Ygritte.
Yeah.
Not me. I'm a Daenerys fan.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're a Daenerys and a Jon Snow fan? Or are you a Jon Snow and Ygritte fan?
I'm a Jon Arryn fan. Ooh, I'm definitely a hard Harris. Stan in that
direction. No, it's creepy. But okay,
Aegon Harris.
All right, Aegon, whatever. Even if we ended up, like, we're doing a little fanficking here, which maybe isn't fair, but in the penultimate episode, we find Daenerys has gone mad. We don't even have the camera on her for the last half of the damn show, right? Arya is escaping on the, or, like, trying to get out of the way, and she has that white horse, and there's a lot of symbolism there. Next episode, none of it pays off. No horse.
Right.
Gone. No horse.
She could have blended in with the Dothraki.
No horse. And more than that, yes, so much.
She could have taken someone's face.
No,
and hit it.
No face taking.
Ah,
no face taking
no
at all.
No face taking is
why
a very
did we
much,
spend years?
No, bad,
why did we spend
bad.
No?
She and took zero faces in the last season, right?
Zero faces were taken. And also, just so that we just to wrap this up before I throw it over to James, there's Daenerys survives the last episode just to show up in the first act of this episode and make it like a little drama, do her little Nazi speech, and then have that little junior high school play version of tragedy where the hero has to kill his girlfriend. It's just, it's, I mean, it's, we in on this network, we predicted that this could happen. So it's not as if we think it's impossible. It's just that it wasn't really well done. And then the rest of the episode was just meandering. Yep. I'm sorry, James.
Your talk about Arya brings up a good point. And I just want to, it's constant about this season, right? There is literally so much stuff that makes sense here in the idea that they've set up a lot of stuff for these characters. I'll use Arya as a great example. We'll jump back to the Battle of Winterfell for a second. I'm not one of those people who has a problem with Arya killing the Night King.
Nope.
I think that's a really cool turn of events.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to bring it up in this part of the show. Go on.
But literally, Arya, a person who has the power to do all that in an interesting way, based on the journey she's gone through over 7 seasons, doesn't do any of that. She just kind of appears out of nowhere and stabs the Night King, as compared to maybe taking the face of a White Walker or... I mean, she's literally, she's almost supernatural at this point. There's no reason why she couldn't kill the Night King. I think she's probably a better choice, you know, narratively than anybody else. But then they don't use any of those narrative powers.
Do you think that, just out of curiosity, that maybe her, I mean, she's had more than just face-taking training. She's had water dancing. She has, you know, martial arts training. And a lot of that came into play. That wasn't enough for you?
It's not that it's not enough. It's that it doesn't actually come into play in killing the Night King, right? I'll say this is kind of the same with Bran, right? Bran has all these powers as the Three-Eyed Raven, and Tyrion's absolutely right. Some sort of omnipresent being is probably a better idea for a king, maybe, or he turns out to be a worse tyrant than anyone.
That's going to be awful.
Yeah, that works. It works real well in every version of Fantasy Egypt.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? But unfortunately, we don't see Bran use those powers in any effective or good way this season.
It doesn't feel like there's built there's payoff for all the build up.
He took a quick flight as a crow.
What did he do as a crow?
Bird stuff.
All Bran
you know what? This is the same thing we said during the Mazes and Monsters review, and that does not bode well.
Oh no!
Why'd you need a bird? Bird stuff. All right.
But that's my thing. There's so little payoff to what was really incredible journeys for these characters. You know, even with someone,
Jamie, where is the payoff of his journey?
Right.
He reversed. I was convinced he was going back to Cersei to kill Cersei. or maybe try to kill her in her own way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like maybe like, you know what? And then maybe hesitates and he says he can't or whatever. But just to be like, I want to be here when I just want to be here. Why? Why? Geordi.
So, yeah, toning down my hatred to a different level of hatred. What I said before was primarily what I would have ideally liked, which I never expected going into this season. What I have a problem with now, most of all, in terms of like what I think would have been good, is what you're saying exactly now. Jamie, in particular, why that Euron and Jamie fight?
Why Euron in general?
Well, okay, so let me give you some details as people. I don't know if you've read the books, but Euron Greyjoy in the books is the most terrifying, ginormous presence of a man with this identity that is akin to an eldritch horror Jack Sparrow. He's terrifying. It's beautiful. I love it. He's one of my favorite villains. So going into this arc, like, Jaime really did throw away everything he did only to have a battle that didn't really matter with Euron. And because he didn't ever confront Cersei about anything.
They just needed someone to kill Euron. That was it. They needed someone to kill Euron, and it should have been somebody with a name. But hey, you know who could have done that? The big damn dragon.
Anyone. Literally anyone. Of all of the people whose storyline they felt, you know who's we really want to tie up? We're going to make sure we know what happens to Euron Greyjoy. I already thought he was dead.
Because
the dragon flamed all the ships.
And that would have been great. Okay. Euron kills one of the dragons. Right?
Yeah, the dragon kills him back. Boom. There we go. Boom, bada bing.
But no, we need a sword fight because it's got to be human or something. I don't know.
Is it specious?
Had to put a pause on Jaime getting to Cersei.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to have a beat.
Had to slow that journey down.
To really earn that, you know, moment where the two of them are like, what do we do with this for? I don't know.
Oh, my God. And just the concept of a man who literally was telling Brienne of Tarth how he killed the king before because he wanted to kill people, all the people. And he went into detail about how much he loved them. And he said, I never cared about them anyway.
Yeah. He's just like, there is character development for Jaime that vanishes in the last, not even the last few episodes, I would say after the battle in Winterfell with the Night King, but even like, there's just stuff that you just feel like, is this ever going to mean anything? And at first, when Bran first sees Jaime and he's like, I've been waiting for you. And I'm like, you know what? This is close to a love, but it's a segue to a hate. I'm like, that's pretty neat. All right, cool. I like the fact that he's beyond it now. And, you know, we all did what we had to do to get to where we are now. Cool. And then it was like, oh, no, wait, hold on. Everybody's just sort of letting go of everything, including your own personal character development? Why?
Sloppy writing?
Yeah, everybody. So I've gotten a lot of crap from people saying that. But you know what? I don't know. It's at very least rushed writing.
Okay, I'll accept that.
It's rushed, but it's also rushed because they chose to rush it. They were the ones who said, yeah, we don't want to do this forever. And they shouldn't be, you know, handcuffed to a radiator and forced to write forever. But at the same time, if you chose
Martin
that...
Martin should be, but...
Well, yeah, of course. We're geeks on the internet. We have to crap on Martin and make him write more. But like, if you're going to, you know, agree to do 6 episodes, then do them well. James?
So... I don't know if this is a love or a hate thing, but I kind of want to bring up a short conversation about subversiveness here. It's hard because I think one of the things that's difficult for Game of Thrones, and it is with many stories in this sort of medium where they have two major factors, a book and a series of some kind, and one overtakes the other in either popularity or in physical amount of material. We never know exactly what intent is, but I think what bothers me or what I'm curious about is Game of Thrones truly a work that is supposed to be subversive of fantasy, right? Are we following, you know, the Song of Ice and Fire, the stories of Daenerys and Jon, who maybe aren't actually our heroes?
Right?
That's one of the things that's really interesting about Martin's work to begin with, is that most of these people... In it, these
you would
first
think
person
Ned
characters
was.
Aren't.
Yeah, you would think Ned was, and he turned out not to be that big a deal in a way.
Right? Or is it a traditional fantasy narrative, right? Jon coming back from the dead as a prophesied savior. Daenerys kind of being this ultimate queen. You know, I don't have a problem with either way. I'm fine with a traditional narrative or a non-traditional narrative, but could some of the reasons why we get kind of this crappy ending also be because of an intent to be subversive, without it being earned?
100%. So I'm gonna put this full into crap for you, full into hated it. So I love the idea of being subversive. I think flipping stories around and making them be less than what you would expect is wonderful, but I still think they have to be stories, right? I'm willing to give a little bit of leeway for the Azor Ahai prophecy, right? The chosen one, the Messiah character thing. Because to me, it was always somewhat vague how this ever applied to anyone. In fact, for the majority of the story, it was always like directed at Stannis. And we kind of saw it didn't work on Stannis. And in the real world, we have countless versions of the Messiah not coming true, right? We that's kind of a thing. So I'm willing to allow a little bit of room on things like that, where stories you would think are going to go one way do not go that way. But still, they must be stories. So it is weird to bring up a bunch of stuff about a character and then to ignore that stuff, or to fast forward on that stuff, or just to play with it and be like, it really didn't matter that much. To single out, for example, Daenerys as being the one character in the entire story that deserves the villain death, where every other villainous person or gray character that we've run into, you know, they could get hero. I mean, Theon gets a redemption arc, flat out redemption arc. That's since when do we flip the coin? Arya gets a redemption arc. Jon does. The same Targaryen DNA is ticking away in his brain, making him go crazy. And he's been obsessed with honor this entire show. Maybe he's like an hour away from going, well, now that I've got power, everyone must obey the rules of honor at all points. I'm going to kill everybody who doesn't. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe that's why he killed Daenerys. I don't know. Jordy.
So yes, it does come down to this fantasy narrative. And I can definitely appreciate this concept of like, subverting these themes. But what I really find to be problematic is it is so rarely often done well and constant in fantasy to actually have a beautiful protagonist queen on a freaking dragon who does really amazing and beautiful things. I can't think of any traditional long-standing, long-running shows where I have an alternative that's similar to Daenerys. Whereas we have tons of heroes that are like Jon. What I'm disappointed is that this was the first time I felt like I was seeing a character who was exactly like Daenerys. We got to see her rise. We got to see her struggles, her sacrifices, how she tried to be the best person. And at the end of the narrative, to be subversive, we're having that taken away. But that is not something we actually get. We get to see like the aftermath. Like we get to see in Lord of the Rings, like the beautiful elven queens far off in the distance. But we don't get characters like Daenerys. I don't have alternatives. I don't get to turn on the TV and say, ah, yes, here's my beautiful female protagonist who gets to run off being
the perfect
queen. You would
think that the subversion is actually having her exist in many cases.
That's the good argument. Because of this, because of this, I don't get that. That's why I'm disappointed. Because everyone's saying, well, look, this is what happens, but this always happens. This is what we always get, and that's why I'm disappointed.
Michelle.
This is one of the things that I'll probably hit on this for the loves as well. Wasn't a big fan of the whole Sansa declaring the North its own kingdom.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, I have reasons for both. But my one here is they're going to go like economically bankrupt within like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
They have no food. They have no resources. They just went through a huge war.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was just a power play. And also, now the Starks are just in charge of everything.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
So.
Talk about subverting expectations.
Yeah.
The main character family. Two kids in this family died and we are all like, what? And their parents, which is a given for heroes.
Yeah.
And we're all like, this is such a subversive. No, it isn't.
No.
Three main characters made it to the end.
That's fine.
Even the character nobody really gave a damn about, and the weirdo.
Poor Rickon. I liked Rickon.
No. Let's talk about that last scene, right? Because like the majority of that finale was actually denouement. Right? It was very weird, too. So Jon kills Daenerys. Then
he could have gotten away with it.
Yes. Time jumps because of facial hair on Tyrion, I guess. And we find that the Unsullied have taken him prisoner for killing their queen. And they are putting him in front of a council Why? Where does the line exist? The last half of this show, I'm going to make it a little bit more generic, doesn't really follow any narrative like reason other than we need to wrap this up when we've got like 45 minutes.
The Unsullied could have just sacked everyone and called it a day. Like, this is ours now.
Why didn't they kill him upon finding him?
Right? That's what I'm confused by. I tell you
why we didn't see it. We didn't see it because it would have been very hard to play that out. In the same way, we didn't see Daenerys' face on the back of that dragon because Emilia Clarke is a great actress. I don't know if she could play the, I'm suddenly crazy, let me kill all these innocents. I don't think you could have played it off very convincingly. And I think the same thing goes with Grey Worm and like, I'm going to have to arrest you, chief. You killed my queen and goddess. And then everything else from that. Sansa getting up and saying, we're going to declare ourselves. I mean, I love Uncle Sit. We're going to put that aside.
That was funny.
Yeah, we can't talk about that right now. But like Sansa, like I've been rooting for her since day one. She has been my character, my misunderstood character, my queen in the north. Cool things could happen with her. What did she do in this last season other than be resistant to Daenerys? Maybe for good reason. She's a little distrustful, but also like you have nothing. You need her. You desperately need her. So she's got that like little wall there. Speak poetically to Tyrion once or twice, which is okay. And then at the end being like, by the way, I want to be the queen of the north after my brother became king, which makes her feel like it's like Sansa 1.0.
She did hold a knife for a little bit.
She did. She did hold a knife for a little bit. Sansa 1.0, literally all, she hasn't learned a damn thing. Because what did she do the first time? She told too much information. Only when she did it for Ned, when she had said, oh, Ned, yes, he was a traitor, my father, please forgive him, she did it innocently without knowing what the consequences are. And here we're led to believe she kind of knew what the consequences would be of telling Tyrion, because Tyrion's a noted blabbermouth and is best friends with Varys. This is so much like stretching it to make it fit. It just doesn't land. There's so much that doesn't land. Why did all the lords give up all their power? Why do they all decide, yeah, let's decide we're going to have a... I mean, yeah, they were sick of fighting. Cool. Bran, why not? We'll elect our king every few years. I'm sure there'll be no conflicts because of this.
Who's the new guy from Dorne?
Who's the new guy from Dorne? Why is there a water bottle? No, we're not going to focus on that. The tongue-in-cheek mocking of democracy... Which was, ouch. It feels like it was put in there just because fans were talking about it. Oh my God, so much annoying.
The way Sam just sat down, was like, oh yeah, democracy's done.
Oh, okay, never mind, my idea was bad.
And then moments later they have a republic based on the lords. God.
That eventually leads to Orange Kings.
It's not a good look. Jordy?
First off, just going back to like, oh yeah, they didn't sack King's Landing. That right there, that's just the most prime example of does not make sense. Because Daenerys declared that all of the Khalasar was her blood rider. If a Khal is killed in battle, the blood riders must, on their honor, kill anyone around them responsible for it. And then themselves.
Yeah, do we even know how many of the Dothraki were left? It's like a random number that
we saw a ton of them.
Well, whatever there should statistic. Be none now.
Well, maybe there was none after one battle. Then there was a lot more, and then they were all on boats, like going around. Some of them apparently, and the Night Watch.
No, the Unsullied got on the boats. I think the Dothraki are just wandering around Westeros.
Second note. Edmure deserved better. He was in a dungeon for 5 years because Robb Stark didn't keep his word. He was tortured endlessly. And I'm supposed to just be like, haha, it's so funny to watch him be belittled by Sansa, who didn't have to suffer through that because of Robb's indecision and inability to do that.
At least we got to find out what happened to him. We found out what happened to him and Robb, and I guess, great. Sure, there's plenty of other characters who had a lot more stakes that we did not know anything about. And I know that's arguing two sides of the same issue. You're saying you're rushing through it too quickly and then you're not giving me enough details. But hey, this is the hated part of the show. And it bothered me. Pete.
To add to that one, that list, was Illyria Sands?
Yes. Sand? Maybe who still was, locked in the dungeon.
Yeah.
Watching her daughter rot. Maybe. Or
oh,
maybe
I
not.
Forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Sad.
Lots of sadness. Lots of sadness. We've glossed over things that happened earlier in the season. The line of how line of sight on scorpions work. How a flying dragon can sort of. And it's really. I'm sorry. Just to dial it all back. James, when you said that you weren't sure about whether this was good or bad, and I said that I was going to turn it directly to hate. James, can you remind me what you said?
I wanted to know, what do we think this narrative intentionally is? Do we think it is a traditional fantasy narrative where the heroes of the story are Jon and Daenerys? Or is it subversive in the way that a lot of Martin's other characters are, that we're not actually following the story of the heroes, but of just other characters or the villains or something?
Yes, part of it is that even if you're defying expectations, you need to make it a story. The second part of it is that mystery problem. I think Game of Thrones had a mystery problem. Lots of genre TV nowadays have a mystery problem, where their interest in keeping a mystery to defy expectations and to defy norms is so important, so it's such a big deal, that they like conceal character development so that they have those sudden moments where it's, oh no, this character is now evil, or this character is now insane. But it's all because they're trying to hide the fact so that they could have that twist. And I don't know if it's worth it. To me, it definitely didn't pay off. It didn't pay off where Cersei was suddenly making these weird choices. It didn't pay off when dragons were suddenly very easy to shoot out of the sky. And it certainly doesn't pay off when it comes to Daenerys.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point, Frank.
Thank you.
I have a complaint.
All right.
I am the complaint department. It's also just one of the things that doesn't make sense. What is Jon going to do at the Night's Watch?
Oh, yeah. What is the Night's Watch for?
Leave.
Tormund's boyfriend.
Is that kind of what is assumed?
I think Jon GTFO'd.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I wasn't sure, but like, what does, just in general, what does the Night's Watch do?
I have friends who argued hard that the Night's Watch was just, like, whether or not the Night's Watch really exists anymore.
Yeah.
And then they were using, like, a bunch of references in the text. But you know what? I don't think there's enough text. I don't think they decided. I think it's just like, well,
if anything, maybe they, like, aid the wildlings or prevent them from coming south.
In theory, they do the same thing they've done for the last 100 years.
Technically, we never had any proof of the whites.
Exactly.
So now, yeah, that threat's gone. Winter is come and gone.
Seriously,
but
what
still,
are those two guys going to do?
What are they doing?
And
all those other people, what the crazy dude that had Gilly, like, they're all dead, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's dead.
I think that the dark side of this is that the Night's Watch is back to guarding wildlings, and that we're way too romantic if we think that anything has really changed in the North.
Yeah.
And the really optimistic, and doesn't seem like it holds any water, is that the Night's Watch was an excuse, like, just so that Jon can leave with the wildlings. Mm-hmm. I definitely think Jon's with the wildlings.
Yeah,
that's
I think
fine.
So too.
But I like that it was intentionally done. Tyrion was like, oh, hang out with the, quote, Night's Watch. But why would they be that stupid? And they leave. They leave the continent. Why would it even matter? Why did anything matter?
Yara could still be angry. She sided with Daenerys.
Yeah, but I mean, the likelihood that Yara was going to be...
Yara, the one who has previously advocated for the Iron Islands to be their own kingdom?
Yeah, and didn't...
And didn't say a peep?
After the North got it? Yeah.
And now they're geographically cut off from the other five kingdoms.
Yeah.
Because I believe the Iron Islands are the only ones that don't border anything but the North.
Yeah, they're part of the North. They're not, yeah. I absolutely hate that every character of color in this show just got wrapped up and thrown away. That's it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, didn't they offer Grey Worm and a lot of those people like, hey, there's a land you can become lords, and they're like, no, we're going to go sail somewhere else. F becoming relevant characters.
Well, they went back to Noth.
Yeah.
North?
I don't remember how to say it, but it's because that was Grey Worm and Missandei's plan. So he honored it, but I agree that, yeah, they just wrapped up everyone. Like, bye.
It was way too quick. It was just, and, you know, dying, Missandei dying as sort of like being shoved in a refrigerator. I mean, like, it was so inexplicable. The way I thought it might work with why Daenerys, like, Cersei, you're smart. we'll take this from Cersei's perspective. You're a smart person. You have a captive, and she has a giant weapon that could destroy you. How about keeping the captive next to you so she's less likely to burn you?
Well, that was the whole point behind trying to keep the people around, I guess, but that just didn't work.
That didn't work. Okay, cool. But, like, this is a little bit easier, and it's instead of keeping a bunch of people in your building, you keep one girl.
Yeah.
Maybe she could teach you a language or something, or maybe about fetal alcohol poisoning. It just wrapped up like so many other characters never addressed again.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Didn't matter. Dorne was thrown away. Missandei was thrown away to be a tool for Daenerys' poorly written ending. Everything was disrespectful, but hey, the white heroines are happy, so let's be fine with it, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's not certainly, this doesn't excuse it, but it certainly isn't a new problem for Game of Thrones either. This is something I've been complaining about for years. They just really, you know, didn't know what to do with a lot of those characters of color. And then
even,
you know,
when they're in Westeros, like we wrote excuses for them before when you're like, oh, I guess they're not part of the main storyline.
But Martells, yeah, exactly.
It doesn't, it's just ridiculous. Ow.
I just didn't like how the Night King went out, actually. Or really? how the undead was dealt with at all. That was really weird for me because I felt like it did such a great job in the first episode of setting up, oh, BT dub, zombie apocalypse, and then, like, we're going to make you forget about that. We're going to have all these things go on so that you don't remember that there's a zombie apocalypse
coming. In just the first episode, they set up that the end was coming, that maybe winter was coming. They just brought it up the first episode this season.
Well, I like the first episode of the entire series.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's more on the money.
Sorry.
It's been a thing for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah.
They just
first moment of the first episode, they set up zombies. Everything's coming. There's a ritual circle in the snow. And then it's like, oh, wow, this is like, and then they immediately do some great work to make you forget that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And
which, as it turns out, was probably the appropriate response because it turns out it wasn't really a big deal.
It was just like, no, it was a big deal, but it wasn't a bigger deal than anything else. Uh-huh. It was just yet another faction vying for the throne, for lack of a better term.
Basically, James.
I just wanted to throw my support behind Al. I really did think that this was the point of maybe not a Game of Thrones, which is kind of how I justified it after the episode of Winterfell.
It's Game of Thrones, not Game of Winters. And
but
yeah.
But yeah, in the books, it's a Song of Ice and Fire. I just really thought that it was. Everybody's going to be busy thinking about this BS, and then all of a sudden, it's going to be like, oh, crap. And then to have it all just resolved so neatly and so easily, and then be like, all right, let's move on to going back to our politics and arguing with each other.
And I guess it was very weirdly disappointing to be like, I guess that was the point all along. I guess that was what it was always about. And I'm like, huh.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally feel that, Al.
But then the next few episodes talk about how pointless that is.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
Even the war is pointless. They melt the throne, and then Bran gets to be king because he doesn't want to be, and Tyrion gets to be the Hand because he doesn't want to be. It's a bunch of not it. It's a round of not it.
And they have this very weird discussion about, like, we're not going to have sons and, like, inherit the throne anymore. You're all just going to meet up at this place and vote on a new king. And I'm like, didn't y'all just laugh at democracy all of like 2 seconds ago? Why are we suddenly in favor of that again?
It's the lords that get to decide this time.
It's like the Electoral College, guys.
Oh, it's all a reference to something.
I hate my life.
Yep. All right. Well, if you hate your lives, that's an odd thing to transition on.
I had one question. Did we ever actually establish that Bran can't have kids?
That's a line of dialogue in the episode. He cannot father children.
Yeah, but we don't know if we can rely on
that. How does Sansa know?
Yeah, how does Sansa know about that? I guess they're close.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, maybe Sansa asked that, you know, strong female character that dragged them around on a sled for 3 goddamn years.
And then we died and no one
did
cares.
She?
No, she didn't.
We don't know what happened.
No, she was in episode 2 or in episode 1 of this season.
Was she? Are you sure?
When Bran makes it back to Winterfell.
Oh, I thought
and
she
he
got
says,
killed.
Yeah, I don't need you anymore.
Oh, you're right. I remember that.
Yeah. You should go home.
And although also, we don't know Game of Thrones didn't need her anymore.
We should assume that she was dead. We could extrapolate that she was killed by the White Walkers. Because I think it was Dolorous Ed reported that everybody who isn't already in Winterfell is dead.
Oh, Jesus. Good job, everybody. Glad we had this talk.
Yeah, so I don't really know who all those wildlings we saw at Castle Black were.
At the very end, the last end. There was no, a
they're the ones
extras.
They're the ones that went with Tormund.
All right.
I've heard that Dothraki was amongst them, and I'm like, I don't know why they would just add that person in
so
there.
So cold.
It's so cold. Nobody willingly goes into that.
Why would they, like, we're from a warm climate. We're going to go live in the coldest part of the planet now?
Maybe the Dothraki fell in love with a wildling.
Yes.
I mean, that tracks
about as much as anything, and it happened off camera because that's where things happen in this show now.
Yeah.
I have one final point.
All right.
You know, one thing you can learn from Game of Thrones. Don't try to do anything. Don't try hard, because it doesn't matter, because you're just going to end up back where you started.
Yep. Everyone ends up back where they started, which is...
Nobody can ever improve from their lineage, and you're only what your genetics make you.
Yep. You were born to be crazy. Sorry.
Oof, jeez, yeah.
Unless you're Jon Snow.
I don't know.
No, Jon Snow!
He was born to be a homeless... Eskimo man.
He was born to be a
bastard. Well, not crazy. Irish, not crazy. Irish, he was born to be a bastard.
Anybody who was expecting a uplifting message from this show not paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, if you weren't paying attention to the first half of this show...
At least incest still turned out to be bad.
Did it, though?
Yes, it did. Yeah, it did. Every time it turned out bad.
If you weren't paying attention to the first half of this show because you loved the way Game of Thrones wrapped up, hey, good news! You're in the second half of the show now, where we are only allowed to talk about the things we loved about Game of Thrones. James!
I really want to talk about episode 2 of this season. I think it's brilliant. And I think you guys remember when we did our, like, what we hope from Game of Thrones going forward. I was already concerned about the rushed pacing and from season 7 and what we were going to get in season 8. I said, I really hope that they slow down enough to focus on the things that I thought made Game of Thrones amazing in the beginning. And that's what
give us a little background on what happened with episode 2.
So episode 2 is the episode where everybody is kind of preparing for essentially what they think is going to be their deaths, right? It's the episode before the Long Night, and everyone kind of spends their last night together. And, you know, one of the things that I thought that made Game of Thrones so amazing is these intimate character moments. And we got them. We got them in a plenty. Game of Thrones managed to, at least for one episode, slow down and give us, to the most part, all these incredible interactions with characters who either had never met or characters who hadn't met in a long time, or, you know, just the things that really is good writing, that really is the sort of excellent writing that Game of Thrones was always, I thought, really best at. The things for me that always worked in Game of Thrones were those moments. And to, you know, to get at least one episode of that good stuff before we went out was totally an absolute pleasure.
I absolutely agree. The first 3 episodes of this season were great for me. Almost perfect. That first episode where they all finally get in the same place at the same time, that's been a dream of mine. Almost everybody was. I mean, you know, a couple of the people from King's Landing weren't in the story yet. And obviously all the people that didn't make it to the last season in terms of focus. Not talking about the people who died or never made it from the books. But, like, it was nice to see all these different storylines come to one corner and one area, and then the second episode getting all those wonderful character moments. Brian getting knighted was so amazing. It's just perfect. And honestly, up till the third episode, which, to be on blunt, I'm not going to talk too much about what I hate, but in that third episode, as far as I'm concerned, that should have been the end of Game of Thrones. I don't think there needed to be 3 additional episodes. If you needed to wrap up those story arcs, do it in a couple of scenes, and whatever. I don't, like, Cersei dies somehow. She might as well just die from rocks falling on her anyways. That's why she dies of drinking too much. It doesn't matter, because I cheered so loud at the way the Night King died. It was amazing to me. Jordy?
I actually do really love the scene where Brienne gets knighted, because you can just see what it means to her.
Oh, yeah.
And the acting in that scene is just so phenomenal that I just can't help but just be awed by it. That second episode was just so beautiful to me. I frankly agree with you, Frank, that the first three episodes were perfect for me. I could have lived with not a Azor Ahai thing. I could have lived with a bunch of it. All of it was satisfying and it was good. And if we end Game of Thrones at season 8, episode 3, then I think it's a wonderful series and it wraps on it.
Yeah. Just to throw back to that scene with Brienne, Tormund. I'm not a king, but if I were a king, I'd knight you 3 times over, whatever, 10 times over. I literally, my wife looked at me and was like, mm-hmm. And I was like, mm-hmm. That is our language of love from now on. It's Tormund just being wonderful. James?
I think I have probably a controversial like.
All right.
I really like Cersei's death. I like that she doesn't suffer some incredibly cruel fate. I like that she's scared at the end. Cersei has always been one of my favorite characters. And before she became like a pure-on villain, you know, just blowing up churches and murdering people in the streets.
I'll argue she was still a character at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I loved the complexity of Cersei, you know, and to have her to have complex emotions in that moment was, I think, important for me. I think if they did any one character who they've done a huge disservice to a little bit of justice, I felt like that was a little bit of justice for Cersei. I don't know about Jaime, but
if anything,
complex emotions for Cersei was important.
I agree. And if anything, I would like to have seen more of her, not just drinking wine, looking over a balcony. But that's a little close to hate. I'm not going to. I've been called. I've been flagged. Just to pull it out, it's not just the first three episodes. There's things to pull away from the later ones. I really enjoyed, I'll take a random. There's the scene where Daenerys in the very last episode appears. It's the most gif-able scene.
Yeah.
And Drogon is behind her and it looks like she has demon wings. Beautiful.
Oh, the cinematography is always good.
Cinematography throughout the season has been on point, and the acting. All the acting, even in scenes I didn't like, I'm like, I like this acting. Yep. And it makes it even more frustrating, but I'm not going to talk about the frustration. I'm going to just celebrate the actors and the cinematographers and the directors. It looked nice. Jordy?
Absolutely. I think that even though I absolutely hated what they did, I'll never forgive them for what they did.
Bell, you can't.
But no, this is a good. This is good.
Stick to the good.
I love the acting that Emilia Clarke did in that final scene with Daenerys. I think that there's never been a better testament to how talented an actor is than to give life to a character whose writing may have taken her in a different direction than what the actress believed. And she gave life to a character's final moments in a way that I just never expected to see in acting. I underappreciate actors all the time when I'm watching good media because I have the good writing to fall on and believe in. But I believed in Emilia Clarke's vision of Daenerys. It was what I saw in Daenerys. And I saw that character in the end of her, and I'm just so astounded watching that.
Yeah,
and
it was a great job. Ow.
I really liked the Clegane Bowl.
Woo woo.
I thought it was great. I thought that Sandor had a great story arc throughout the entirety of the series, actually. And that those final moments were fantastic. Out of an episode I was not a big fan of, that was great. That was amazing. I was all on board with everything that took place in those
Sandor
scenes.
With Arya.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Cersei. Excuse me.
I'm just gonna skirt past you. Like,
as frustrating as I found that, I found it too funny to hate.
Yeah, it was just kinda like
it's gonna go.
Because it wasn't about that. It was just about the two of them. And I'm like, yeah. Because it was that weird moment of like he wasn't like it's arguable how human he ever was, but it was this moment of like suddenly disobeying the creators, yeah. Lack of a term, because otherwise he's just a golem that's hanging around. And like you get that great moment where the Hound beats him, like stabs him, like I outsourced it, and it doesn't matter. But it's like, oh my god, this is still great. Like he knows he could win, and like there's so much that goes on there, and he beats him anyway, just by like, but he has to sacrifice himself to do it. And I love the moment when he's just like, yeah, that's you, that's what you've always been, and it's just like you just look like it now, and it was great.
Pete,
I gotta say, I didn't hate a lot of the big plot elements that everybody else seems to have a problem with. But I will acknowledge that there are things to be dissatisfied with, definitely. But I really loved all the little things. They got so many more of the little things right. Like, that the scene where Brienne is writing in the Book of Brothers.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Which, you know, was a callback to an element that was introduced way back at the beginning of the series. The King's Guard book, the record of everything, the history going back, every head of the King's Guard writes in it.
Right. Gives like a performance review and history of all the people who were before them.
Exactly.
Or the person immediately before them, especially.
I think they did such a good job of showing that, okay, now she's inherited that position,
mm-hmm.
which is not something we were told before that.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotional twist that she has to put on writing the last lines of Jaime's life, the love of her life. I guess.
Yeah, but a big underline. I don't know about that. But yes, a person in her life.
Man that she came to greatly love and respect.
True, yes.
Except for their last moment together.
It's right out of episode 3, I'm thinking. But anyways, yes, I agree. There was a lot to love about that scene, and we may not have discussed it in the hate section. It's too late now. Anybody else have something that they really want to talk about?
I really enjoyed the symmetry that you can see from the way the series ended as to how the series started.
Oh, yeah? All right.
Outside of the two deaths of the Stark kids. But there's even, I don't know if everyone picked up on it, but there's, I forget which episode, it might be episode 1 or 2. I think it's before they even left Winterfell, where Sansa says, "I will be queen one day."
Uh-huh.
And boom, she is just not queen of the Seven Kingdoms. Mm. She's queen of Winterfell.
Yes.
Which, you know, I said I hated that, but I also like it.
Yeah.
Specifically, I like it just for that.
All right.
So, and then we see Jon goes back to the Night's Watch. Arya is just being weird. So, not that that's anything wrong with that. But
she's in her own spinoff show.
Yeah. The weirdness.
Theon is dead to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. James?
I'm going to jump on with Michelle. For the most part, I really like where the Starks end up. I like that Arya goes off. You know what I mean? Like, Arya has been on this adventure. She's never someone who's going to be able to come back to just living in Winterfell. We've seen Sansa gain such an incredible understanding of the politic of the world. You know, to have her be, you know, queen of Winterfell, to be in charge, feels right. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Jon's ending. I know people don't like it.
No, we're not focusing on the negatives. Just go right with the positives.
I feel like he never fit in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
He's always been this outsider. And the best stuff we've seen of him was at the Night's Watch, was with the Wildlings.
Yeah.
There's a reason he's the only person in X many thousands of years to be able to bring all these people together. The world of King's Landing isn't for him. I feel like I would have been severely disappointed if Jon had been sitting on the Iron
Throne. I feel Jon would have been severely disappointed if he had been sitting on the Iron Throne.
Jon the Wildling is much better than Aegon the King. I agree.
Totally.
We've talked about it in the beginning. The A's and B's aren't as problematic as the things we have already discussed. But yeah, I think that's very fair. I only glossed on it, but I want to talk about it in more detail. I was terrified and I cheered in the end of the battle with the Night King. I was so frightened about everything. I didn't know. I thought it was everyone going to die. Was, you know, all our main characters. Like, I had no clue. They managed my expectations perfectly. I was legitimately afraid of, like, anything happening. Especially after the last two episodes, getting everybody together, and then the episode where people actually get to bond. Then this one made me feel like, all right, they basically set it up so anyone can die. And in that moment, Theon sacrifices himself. I've always been kind of iffy about Theon, but still, like, I think it was a good redemptive arc. Not like a candied one, which we got. Never mind. No, only good. It was a good redemptive arc. I thought Bran, his weirdness was playing into this role. I was wondering, what are you doing, Bran? Are you trying anything? Are you trying to, like? I was very frightened. That moment where the Night King is just standing over him, and then from the shadows, Arya comes in. I screamed. I roared. And then the Night King catches her and I roared even louder. Then she drops the blade and shoves it, and when all the whites exploded, I was going ape. I totally get people's complaints. I don't care about that. It was amazing. It was so amazing.
I can actually go on a thing I like. I do actually like that. I also like that Arya was the one to do it. I know a lot of people are angry about that for some reason, but I like it because she's been trained for so long since the first season be this assassin. And if you're gonna
She literally snuck past us, the viewers.
Yeah.
We forgot about her. That was cool.
It was. And I feel like the show set up very well for her to kill the big bad at the end of the game. Like, and I felt like, no, this is appropriate. This is right. I may not have liked everything that happened there, but her being the one to finally kill him off made the most sense to me.
In fact, just to segue off of that, because I know it relates, the Azor Ahai prophecy that she made, just doesn't really follow or whatever. I actually do kind of like the way it... So in the books and in the show, mostly the books, I'll be honest, I never liked that prophecy because it felt way too fantasy messiah. And it felt way too late in the game. It didn't show up until like a second book, third book maybe? I don't know. It showed up later in the game, this story. And I'm like, I don't know about introducing more characters and more mythology and all this. It seems weird. I didn't really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And the Melisandre, that as a character also felt a little, you know, like you're evil and you're like you're a hanging thread. What are you doing around here? The fact that she had a crisis of faith, but managed to still help, but then also still ended up perishing to the ice in the fire and ice kind of makes me feel like, oh, this is a dance that goes on forever in a way. And maybe this time the Messiah didn't do anything, do what you expected him to do. But there was still a role for the Lord of Light in this story. It was mythological enough for me to be like, okay, cool. But it wasn't so on the point where like somebody ends up becoming, you know, a magical being like it's an anime or whatever.
Yeah, I got
Frank, that's a really good way of looking at that. I've never heard that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I'm impressed.
Thank you.
Very good.
Hey, awesome. Pete.
On a completely different level, I really loved the humor throughout the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they struck a perfect tone or a perfect balance of the exact right amount of humor that you needed to cut through the dense tragedy and we're always going to subvert your expectations throughout the show. I think Tyrion was a joy throughout. And I really enjoyed that last scene with the small council.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
It starts off with Tyrion rearranging the chairs, just like, or kind of echoing when his father took over the small council.
Yeah.
And I've seen it pointed out before. I really enjoy the fact that... oh, now I can't think of his name. The Onion Knight.
Oh, Davos.
Davos. Yeah. Actually gets a pretty thorough arc going from being illiterate to correcting people's grammar.
He picked that up from Renly or something,
girl.
Right? Or,
no,
oh, no,
Shireen,
Little Dead.
Yeah.
Oh, Shireen.
Yeah.
Rip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, she taught him how to read.
Here's another one. Lyanna Mormont's death.
Oh my god!
Amazing.
That was so heartbreaking and wondrous. Oh, she's adorable and badass.
That was a great moment.
So good.
I was sitting there screaming at this thing. If you're killing her, she better take that thing down too.
And she does.
Yes.
So good. So good. Oh my god.
I also want to jump off of the deaths first, to jump on to more talk about the deaths for a second. I also like that it wasn't like an incredible main character bloodbath. I feel like Game of Thrones can get this reputation because of, you know, Ned and Catelyn and Rob that, you know, like, oh, a show where anybody could die. But kind of like you said, with managing the expectations, you know, a lot of our characters that we love walked away from this.
And
you know?
I liked that. I liked it. I liked it because I certainly
did
didn't hesitate for a moment thinking that they were going to, I thought they were all going to die. And that's cool.
You know, and it's something that a lot of other shows, Walking Dead, struggle with, you know, making sure that those deaths feel narratively earned. You know, and I think that they did a really good job of who lived and who died and whose story ended appropriately and so on via death.
Any other loves that we want to bring up?
The effects still look great.
Yeah.
I still like the dragons. The they still look good. And the visuals are, like, we went over cinematography and stuff, but I want to say that the, a lot of, again, some people have complained about the CGI, but I'll disagree. I think the CGI was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah. Actually, you know what? I really love Drogon torching the throne.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like, I know, I'm just, this is a segue to the, like, I maybe didn't like how we got there, but the idea of that as a visual for breaking the wheel, for destroying this thing people have fought for so long, I thought it was awesome. I really did like it. I really did enjoy that imagery. I also think it's hilarious to think that Drogon was just angry at the chair. There's a great cartoon of a person being stabbed.
It's fine. All right.
I have a big problem with everybody complaining about the cups and the water bottles. Game of Thrones has had a car, jeans, a laptop cord, previous cups. It's really difficult. None of you guys have ever, and I certainly haven't, ever worked a production at that scale. I mean, there are like literally five people whose job it is to do continuity.
I can't even tell if this is a love or a hate, James, because, I mean...
It's a love on the show and the hate on us.
Oh, good. Good way to wrap,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, kind of. Well, no, it's not. It's just like, calm down, guys, right? There are continuity mistakes in everything.
So I think it's fair, and we even brought it up in the show, that it was like a sign of how rushed and lazy things got. In reality, I just think it's a vent. It's what people used to vent. I think maybe a good number of people who signed that petition to redo season 8, which is ridiculous, were doing it partially because it's ridiculous. I mean, there's a petition out now for having Danny DeVito play Wolverine. That's ridiculous,
that,
because of course he should play Wolverine. Of course.
Yes.
But I think, all in all, after a decade's worth of storytelling, we got an ending. And a lot of genre cannot say that. I mean, there's enough good in what we've talked about in this episode to maybe say, hey, all right, this wasn't so bad. Because there's, like, I mean, some of us, even disguised, if you end the show, if the season halfway through, you're like, that's a pretty satisfying ending. It's not, you know, Firefly season 2. It's not Star Trek The Next Generation, who knows where it's going to go. We got an ending, and I guess we should be grateful for that, more or less.
More or less.
And there's always Martin's book, which, I mean, that guy is rolling on it right now. I think he's just so... Literally weeks ago, people were like, well, if he wanted to have a say in it, if he wanted us to care about his books, he should have finished them by now. And now many more people are saying, I can't wait till he finishes the books.
Oh,
I need to
God.
Know how this really
He's supposed
ends.
To have two more of them left.
It's something to look forward to. Hey, if you want something to look forward to, subscribe to Nonproductive right now in your podcatcher app. We bring the best content you've ever imagined in your brain.
We do, actually.
Through the internets. And we like you a lot. So why don't you like us and follow us on social media? That's how you know when there are new episodes, just in case you haven't subscribed. But really do subscribe. Give us a 5-star review and tell your friends and family and your enemies, I guess.
And your frenemies.
Yeah, absolutely. Winter has come and gone. So it's going to be a summer of fun at Nombro.
Good night, everybody.
Here's my thing, and it's just very apparent that George R. R. Martin and subsequently the writers of the show early on wrote very fluidly. Martin foregoed a time skip in his books because he couldn't justify his characters' actions, because he needs to write them just between action to action, right? That's why he's got 5 billion pages, right? It's because he can't justify their next action without fully realizing their last action. When they set a cap on this show, it's almost like the exact opposite thing of Lost happened. They said, okay, well, what do we need to happen for this to be satisfying? And they wrote those things down on like a big board. And they said, okay, well, Jaime needs to die with Cersei, and this needs to happen, and that needs to happen, and this needs to happen. You know, these are the things we think would be satisfying, quote unquote. And then they just started writing characters to get there. And that's why you see people like Tyrion all of a sudden, the smartest guy in Westeros, start making a bajillion mistakes. Or Daenerys suddenly snapping on a dime and going fucking nuts. You know, it's just, they were writing, you know, as compared to writing for, you know, writing fluidly, they're writing for the narrative, which is fine. There are plenty of shows that do that. Law and Order writes between the narrative beats. you know, but it's just never been Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's
that's what's so jarring.
It's jarring, exactly. It's jarring because it's not this show. It didn't feel like it was this show, and then that's what we got. And I'm kind of torn in the whole, imagine if you're a filmmaker and you're like, I don't want to keep doing this. I'm bowing out. And let's say it's not money. Let's say HBO is like, people really need an ending for this. We need you. And you're like, okay, I could do it, but I can only commit this much time and it has to be done. That's it. It's got to be whatever it is.
And
like a way I'm like, all right, thank you for giving me what you gave. Cause it's the same people that gave me that wonderful Arya moment. But
well,
like at the same time, you kind of petered out towards the end.
But I can also see the decision, you know, HBO makes, right? So we want to be done in the next 3 or 4 years. You know, is that something you could do? And HBO at that point has a decision. Well, do you replace them? These people who wrote, say, seasons 1 through 4 or 5, the things that have made them incredibly successful and HBO an incredible amount of money? Because it's very often that when series change showrunners, they change direction. There's a shift in quality and tone that just doesn't line up or
Walking
changes
Dead.
Fundamentally yeah. part of it.
Walking Dead.
And, you know, if I were HBO, I would have been the same decision. I'd have been like, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
if you can wrap it up in that time, it's yours because I don't trust giving it to anybody.
Yeah, it's hard to do. It was a hard choice for almost everyone. They were too big to fail. Oh, my God. They were a TV show. You're absolutely too big to fail, and that's interesting. So I could talk to you about this for hours. Maybe we should do a Patreon special or something.
Well, if you want to do a Patreon special, we could talk about... this is so dumb. I totally agree that I think it's annoying that they used kind of like mental illness and like specifically like the idea that she's a Targaryen and she could go crazy. As a thing, particularly because it's not earned, but also genetically speaking, with the Daenerys would share like 75% of her genetics with her father, which would mean to be a 3/4 chance that she would have some sort of the exact same madness that he had.
Well, that's but if it's a genetic fantasy. Madness. So incest, yeah.
What was that? It's also fantasy, so incest doesn't have to work the same way. It really doesn't. Yeah. You know, there are dragons.
And it's also, you're talking about a genetic madness. And it's not as if, like, she can't be mad. The argument is that you don't go from not mad to mad and then want to be patted on the back saying, this is a good story that we built, we foreshadowed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, it's not the same.
It's not just madness, though. So incest... based on the study of like kings and stuff like that, they predicted that early onset dementia, Alzheimer's and stuff are like highest in high incest groups. So saying that, you know, like the Mad King might have, you know, essentially just, you know, gone nuts because, you know, that's what happens, you know. But again, it's not earned. It's not like Daenerys was walking around forgetting things or being like, you know, having those signs 2 seasons earlier.
Where my story, my little fanfic of what happened in the penultimate episode has her killing people accidentally while she's angry and killing people that she probably shouldn't be killing. That's a little bit more like, okay, I could see how this is signs of her like not being fit to rule, but also not just like a coin flip on systematically like... avenue by avenue, street by street, killing everybody like with intent.
Well, it's just tough because she doesn't even seem angry. Like one of the things I kind of liked about the death of Varys in the beginning of that episode, it feels almost reminiscent of Ned Stark. You know what I mean? Like I take no pleasure in this. Like you literally betrayed me. You are like my third in command. I have to do this, you know? She's kind of stoic and unfeeling and unhappy about it. You know, to all of a sudden have her be angry and burn people, it doesn't make sense.
Agreed.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.
have a hate that I forgot about.
What's that?
And it falls into this. Everyone online was freaking out about Robin Aaron being suddenly good looking, even though he doesn't speak at all. I don't see it.
Not so much.
No, I don't like. Oh, the glow up. What? Huh?
We're using that too liberally now. Yeah.
Does he not speak a? He doesn't speak a single line.
He does. He does. I think he has a line.
I
think he says I. Yeah. A very noncommittal I. He's like, hi.